So what did Atisha do? He decided he would have to leave India. He'd have to continue his studies abroad, as we might say. But where to go? In the end, he decided to go to what is now called Indonesia. Indonesia was then a great center of the Mahayana. You all know, I'm sure, about the great stupa of Borobudur in Indonesia. Some of you have visited it and photographed it. It's in Java. But Atisha didn't go to the island of Java. He went to the island of Sumatra. He went to the city of Sriwijaya, which then was the capital of a great empire. The site of Sriwijaya is now occupied by the city of Palembang. And of course he had to go all the way by sea, and the voyage took altogether 13 months. So let's just pause to consider this. Let's just compare the teacher's position with our own. We don't have to go abroad to study the Dharma. We can study it here at home, so to speak. Here, there's no shortage of material. We can even study the Dharma in our own language. So many important texts, especially during the last 30 or 40 years, have been translated into English, into German, into French, Spanish, so many other Western languages. That's not to even mention books which are simply about Buddhism, whether histories of it or expositions of its philosophy and so on. In fact, nowadays there's so much material that sometimes we don't know where to start. I can remember 30, 40, 50 years ago, when I was relatively new to Buddhism, if two or three books on Buddhism, including translations, came out in the course of a single year, that was a great event. You knew if you were a serious student of Buddhism, if you were seriously interested in Buddhism, you knew each and every book that came out in those days. But you can't do that now. Nowadays, there are not only scores, there are hundreds, perhaps even thousands of books on Buddhism, on the different forms of Buddhism, different Buddhist practices, schools, and so on, art, architecture, available in English and other languages. So, very often we're confused. We don't know where to start. Well, just think of the scriptures, Pali texts, Sanskrit, Chinese, which have been translated into English. Think of all the commentaries. Sometimes people wonder, well, do we have to study all of these? Do we have to study all the Pali texts? Do we have to work our way through the Pali Tipitaka? With the exception of just a little bit of Abhidhamma, is all translated now? Nice, fat volumes, only 500 or 600 pages each, containing all these wonderful teachings and these great Mahayana sutras, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of them, one or two of them 1,000 pages long. So do we have to study all of them? I mentioned that Dr. Konza had translated 30-odd Prajnaparamita sutras alone, just one group of Mahayana sutras. Do we have to make our way through all of these? Well, I'm not going to say anything about that today. I'm going to say something about it in my next lecture here. This is where, of course, the spin doctrine comes in. Or at least the advanced publicity, just in case anybody forgets. But in any case, whether we make our way through many or few Buddhist texts, whether we study for many hours a week or just for half an hour, we can study the Dharma at home, so to speak, both metaphorically and literally. We can practice the Dharma at home. We can practice meditation here. We can go on retreat here, so to speak. We can enjoy spiritual friendship here. And above all, there's nothing to stop us going for refuge to the Buddha and Dharma and the Sangha here. So in a sense, in this country and other Western countries, we now have it very easy. Everything is available. Everything is accessible. But we don't always realize this, don't always appreciate it, don't always realize just how fortunate we are. And we don't, therefore, always take full advantage of those opportunities which we do undoubtedly have. Instead of taking advantage of them, sometimes we even grumble and complain that we don't have even better advantages. So let us remember Atisha and others like him in Buddhist history. Atisha had to go abroad to study the Dharma. He had to make a dangerous voyage lasting 13 months. We can get to India in 13 hours. We can go comfortably, relatively comfortably, round all the holy places, pay our respects there, worship there, maybe meditate there, and back, or within a week. So let us admire Atisha's heroism. Let us admire his devotion to the Dharma. Let us try to imbibe something of his spirit. Well, Atisha spent 12 years in Sumatra, from when he was 32 to when he was 44. And he studied with the great teacher Dharmakirti, not to be confused with the famous Indian logician of that name of a few centuries earlier. And this Dharmakirti, the Sumatran Dharmakirti, it seems, had studied himself in India in his younger days. So there, at the feet of Dharmakirti, in the city of Srivijaya in Sumatra, Atisha became thoroughly acquainted with all the great classical works of the Mahayana, especially with the writings of Nagarjuna, Asanga, and Shantideva. And we're told that he paid particular attention to all the teachings connected with the bodhicitta, with the arising of the bodhicitta, the will, if you like, the citta, the aspiration to achieve enlightenment, supreme enlightenment, not just for one's own personal benefit, but for the sake of all living beings. And Atisha's interest, more than interest, in these teachings connected with the bodhicitta was certainly not just theoretical. He really took those teachings to heart. Atisha, we may say, was a Mahayana Buddhist in the very broadest sense. And the bodhicitta, we may say, is the heart of the Mahayana. It is the bodhicitta, the arising of the bodhicitta, the will to universal enlightenment, that makes a bodhisattva a bodhisattva. So Atisha was inspired by the bodhisattva ideal. He tried to develop the bodhicitta within himself. And how successful he was in doing this, we shall see, as demonstrated by his life later on.